This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. You can subscribe to the app on Apple and Android. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
Lucy Porter on FUBAR Radio.
Still the upbeat Ali doing his thing. Lucy Porter here with the special lady time on FUBAR, as I'm calling it, special lady time. It's like every special lady time you've ever had. Involves blood, pain. No, not that kind of special lady time. It's women's show on FUBAR. And I've got an amazing studio guest and lots of brilliant women to talk about. So let's start with our album of the week, which is Rilo Kiley. Wasn't that lovely? A little bit of Rilo Kiley, because I decided, in fact, I'm going to introduce the studio guest first. Let's get that done. Amanda, the producer, is here. Hello, Amanda.
Hello.
And excitingly, we have now someone who I almost feel has been on the show before, and I will explain why. Because when we had the lovely Evelyn Mock in, she was doing the show, and
that's the worst introduction I've ever had.
I think I can turn this around. I think you're going to be flattered. So Evelyn was in doing the show, and we were talking about you, Sophie Hagen, and that's who
Hi.
It is.
Hi, Sophie. You snuck that in there.
I know. I'll do a proper introduction in a minute. But in fact, I think I only did it once, but I called Evelyn Sophie. So you are clearly the dominant in my mind.
We get that. So it's me, Evelyn Mark, and Ingrid Dahl, who she's in Brighton. Uh-huh. So Ingrid is a chubby Norwegian comedian, and Evelyn is a chubby Swedish comedian. And I'm Danish, so we get that. Like I was booked for a TV thing a while back, and the producer wrote me and said, oh my God, we just love that bit. We want you to do this bit on TV, the bit about the trousers. Uh-huh. You know the bit you do about the trousers? And I was like, that's Ingrid. That's Ingrid. And there was a promoter once said to me, look, we'd never book Sophie, but we'd totally book you. And I was like, yeah, I'm Sophie.
Oh my
it's
goodness.
Evelyn you want to book. So we get it all the time.
Oh, my all goodness. Well, I feel in a way better and in a way worse They'll go for worse. I feel terrible now.
You should mostly feel bad about having booked Evelyn before me.
I know. Well, that's very true, actually. She was awful.
She's terrible, isn't she?
We would never book Sophie again.
I used to live with Evelyn, so I can say everything because I know everything I say is true.
Yes, exactly. When you've lived with someone, there is nothing like the kind of bitterness and resentment that can build up due to domestic issues that
lots
then spills out. It's great. Oh, good. Oh, well, more of that later. That'd be very nice. Although, actually, it must be quite good if the three of you are interchangeable. If there's ever a gig that you simply can't be asked to do, send along another Scandi-Nordic. One of the Scandi-Nordics.
I think we're already kind of doing that. Like Evelyn is the first person I suggest if I can't make it gig. I don't think I'm the person she sends, but
no.
That's because she's not a good person. She's a horrible, horrible human being.
The awful Evelyn Mock. Well, I used to have that with Joe Enright, who is physically very similar to me. But sounds nothing like she's from Birmingham, and I am not, and I've been mistaken for her a lot. And also Nina Conti I used to get, which I found very flattering in a sort of physical way, and a comedic way indeed.
I can kind of see that, but Evelyn's Chinese. She's actually Chinese. There's not much getting out of that, is there?
Did you not know that you've got that syndrome where you don't realise you're Chinese? Is that what it is?
I've always been told I look like I was from Greenland.
Okay.
That's because Denmark own Greenland, so it's like we don't want to get into that, by the way.
Do you know territorial disputes in the Northern Hemisphere?
We're saving that for the second hour.
Let's do that.
We're
doing thorny stuff. When we have the PIMS in the second hour, then that's when we get into the thorny topics. But it's lovely to have you with us.
No, thank you.
Because we've only gigged together like once, I think. So
when was that? It must have been ages ago.
It was a long time ago. How long have you been over in this country?
About 3 years now. I started coming over 3 years ago, and then I moved. Moved here September 2.5 years ago.
Okay, yes. Yeah. And go back to Denmark a lot?
Yeah, I do. It's too much, I think, because I like being here and it feels like I'm cheating by constantly going back, staying with my mom.
Oh, we don't begrudge it. You're allowed to do that.
I just feel I'm missing out a bit.
In fact, it's quite good because I was reminded by Amanda that you will be able to chip in on the first story that we're going to talk about today is has relevance to Denmark as well as to here, because I want to talk about the Wickle What a Baby. The Wickle Baby. Do you know there was a baby?
No, I haven't heard anything
the
about
Wickle
that.
Baby, no. The Wickle Baby. No, I know.
They should mention it more, shouldn't
There's
they?
There's also an election coming up, but those are two
things. Oh, let's go back to the baby. Let's go back to the baby.
Yeah. So the baby, I'm not going to dwell on the baby. Perfectly pleasant looking baby. Wish her no ill. But the thing that interested me about it was there was mention made in the media of the fact that they've changed the rules of succession in the British royal family so that now this princess will be third in line to the throne?
Yes.
No, fourth.
Yeah. Oh, fourth. Oh, I keep forgetting
about Charles. We keep forgetting that Charles, I know, that is a terrible thing, isn't it? That we keep going, oh, he's still there, isn't he?
Bad Brits.
Oh, God, he's still there. But yes, once that one and the other one and another one have had a go, then she might get to have a go. Anyway, but what fascinated me about it, not fascinated, but what I found mildly interesting about it was that has only been the case incredibly recently that women have had any rights of succession. But then I was reading about the primogeniture. I'm saying that I always want to say primogenitals. it's not, you know, that's not, I think, unreasonable. But this idea that the oldest boy inherits everything in the British aristocracy. And I didn't realise that is still very much the case for posh people, because there's a case going through the courts at the moment, which I'm now desperately trying to Google live on air, of Lucinda Lambton, who is a writer and broadcaster, and her older brother inherited their father was this sort of eccentric peer, and this very rich lord who he was disgraced due to scandals involving prostitutes and drugs and things. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. But
yeah, skip over the interesting stuff.
that's all the interesting bit. But his oldest son inherited everything, and his sisters have been taking him to court in Italy for quite some time. Mm. Because part of the estate is in Italy. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. But I just thought it was absolutely incredible that in 2015, huge swathes of our poshos are still leaving everything to their oldest sons and nothing to any daughters. And it did make me think about the Danish royal family that I know nothing about. Are they a groovy... You know,
they kind of are. I mean, I don't know much about them because I don't really care. But I did find out. Someone told me that your queen.
Yes.
I don't want to say
Elizabeth.
The queen.
Our queen. Elizabeth.
A queen. Your queen. Apparently, she smokes, and that's like a huge secret. Where our queen, the real queen, she does it everywhere and in public. Like, she doesn't give a shit.
Does she? Yeah, what's her name?
Margaret? Question mark? No, Margaret. Queen
Margaret.
Okay. Does she have to go outside to smoke? Or is she allowed to smoke inside because she's the queen?
I think she can smoke everywhere she wants.
She can smoke anywhere she wants.
Wow. And she does it, and it's like she smiles and like big yellow black teeth, and the prince, he's the crown prince. You call him that?
I
directly
know,
translate. Who cares?
Yeah.
Joachim, I think. Oh God, it's so embarrassing if I get this wrong. He's like a Navy SEAL kind of guy, like army person, and he's like they've all finished like university and stuff, so they're quite like. You feel like you can go and have a drink with them.
Yeah.
I'm sure people do. Like, it's just very down to earth. We have kind of a lot of humility about this whole no one's better than anyone else, which is kind of
quite right.
Sounds good, doesn't it? That's why, because every time this comes up, everyone always says, well, I suppose it would be nice to have a Scandinavian star royal family where, you know, they cycle on bikes and they just do normal things.
And that's exactly the image I have.
And they're just very normal. Exactly. You just think they're cycling. And I wouldn't have pictured them chain smoking. I like the fact good on you, Margaret.
Yeah. And there was a recent huge thing that happened with the Queen in Denmark where there's a reporter who's asked her a question. And instead of saying, oh, God, you call it the same thing, don't you? Like you with a big Y, and then like, how do you say that? You know, you address like royalty.
So he used
the informal, where he was like, hey, where did you, blah, blah, and she just stopped him and she went, listen, We didn't go to school together. How the fuck do you think you're... Sorry for swearing.
No swearing is good. Much encouraged.
So yeah. She just completely stepped out of that queen character.
Especially when you're pretending to be a queen.
You're talking to me. I am the queen. She said, we didn't go to school together, did we? And he was like, no, I'm so sorry, Your Majesty. I'm so terribly sorry.
Nice.
She's quite cool. She's quite tough.
See, that is exactly what we need. Because there has been, you know, the hoo-hahs involving our queen recently. There was one where there was a documentary that portrayed her in an unflattering light. And someone got sacked for it. I think quite a lot of people got sacked for that at the BBC, didn't they?
Not the one where she was supposed to have gone out
she
dancing.
She huffed. The one where she huffed out of a room and they said, oh, it was bad.
That was because of a misedit, wasn't it? They edited it to make it look like that
she was in a huff, yes.
Wasn't that when Rolf Harris pointed her picture, though, so...
Okay, yeah, yeah. So maybe she knew something the rest of us didn't.
Well,
but then also someone put their arm around her and then there was a bit of a fuss about that. But
wasn't
she
that so cosy?
Could have been. I think Michelle Obama put her arm around her as well, and people were sort of up in arms about it. And it's like, because we have these awful sycophants, and that's what I dislike about the royal family particularly, is the hangers-on and the lickspittles. You know who you are, Nicholas Witchell, frankly, but you know, those sort of, you just go, oh, God, it's all right for them. They're having an amazing time, but why do you hang around fawning over them?
Why are you up
and, you know, and so it's just terrible that Michelle Obama put her arm around the Queen at the because it's like, well, if anyone has a problem with it, should be the Queen, she should have punched her. That's fine. That's fine. The Queen wants to punch anyone
it
in the face.
It would have started a war.
It would have started a
America's history and your history. That would have been a war.
That's
something worth fighting
for. I mean,
you would have had the war
in,
like, Afghanistan or something,
yes,
but still
yes,
there would
yes.
have been a war.
Oh, exactly.
Let's
some people,
take this outside.
Some innocent people in the Middle East would have paid for it. But yes, you're exactly right. It's I know, it's incredible. I don't know quite... I sort of brought it up with a view to aren't posh people beastly to their daughters, but actually we've sort of turned into a slight Republican rant. Although, see, I don't think I wouldn't mind them staying. I would just like some of the money, just some of the money back. I don't know why they don't just do it off their own bat and go, listen, times are a bit hard, have this yacht and Windsor Castle, say. Balmoral. I mean, they hardly use... Why do they need Balmoral?
I think they use Balmoral quite a lot, but there's quite a few other addresses that they don't seem to...
Yeah.
I mean, they spend Christmas there, but where would they go for Christmas?
Oh, true, actually.
They
that's
spend
very
Christmas
true.
In
no,
the city,
no, no.
They?
We do want them to
Come
be
on.
In snowy Balmoral for Christmas. All right, yeah, fair enough. All right, well, as long as I get something back, that's all I'm
saying.
Yeah,
I wouldn't mind something.
All right. Well,
I don't
if anyone
really
wants
know
to. Oh, God, that reminds me. Sorry. I have got to do our audience feedback from last week.
Splendid.
And set up our list. We always have a list, you see, Sophie. And
a list.
In the hope that people are going to text, email, join in any capacity, tweet, probably. Mm. We set it up at the beginning of the show. In fact, because I have had some feedback, last week's list was things that are unequivocally better about being a woman. And most of them related to toilets. I kicked it off by saying we just have nicer toilets.
Oh, okay.
The general standard of toilets is better. But then, you see, you're looking... Are you
Oh, I had just had a whole other thought.
Oh, did you? Well,
I probably shouldn't
free.
Say that in case you have listeners.
Oh, we have few and they're quite...
I don't want to lose
them. They're quite dark.
Are they?
Well, from what they've been texting in, yes. They, in fact, most of
There was
what
one
was
particular tweet last week that springs to my mind about some kind of masturbation.
Oh, yeah, no, there was a lot of masturbation talk. But no, there was more in the week as well. I've had people basically, yes, about men being able to separate their urine and feces more effectively than an email that you really didn't want to read.
But I've never thought of that.
No, that
Those
is
bastard
better,
men.
Better about being a man, so it doesn't count on a list anyway. But and I also had someone email me to say, what's better about being a woman? Well, everything, since you feminists have ruined everything for men. Which I love. I'm sorry.
That was the plan.
I am so sorry. We've ruined.
Oh my God. So there are more men alive? You haven't killed all of them yet?
Well,
the plan is
slowly, slowly catch your monkey, Sophie. There's, you know, us three women in this room and the. Anyway, I did also. I saw someone commented on something on Facebook the other day saying, blaming feminists for the rise of the Islamic State. I don't know how you get... There is nothing you can't blame on feminism. If anyone wants to tweet in with a thing, And I will tell you how we can blame it on feminism. We'll do that as well. That's a bonus for anyone. But we had some nice people as well getting in touch. But yes, it was mostly people saying that women's toilets are nicer. And someone said, and I can't. Hang on, let me find it. It was a man. I think his name was Stephen. Anyway, Stephen, whoever you were, who said the good thing about being a woman is that in the event of the apocalypse, female survivors would be able to get pregnant and then lactate and then keep lactating to feed the population with their breast milk.
How is that a good thing?
That's not a good thing. I was going to say, no, I wouldn't relish that.
I think he was just enjoying his sci-fi fantasy about permanently lactating women. But but also because men can lactate, can't they? Given the right hormone. Well, they've got nipples.
They probably could in that situation, don't you think?
If they try,
that's why men
hard
have nipples.
Enough. Yes, yes.
At the apocalypse, that's when the body goes, right, guys. We've waited.
Yeah, that's
millions
right.
Millions of years.
We didn't get rid of this through evolution just because
we
were waiting
happen.
For you to lactate.
I mean, women, take what's yours.
Maybe the Mayan men lactated.
Who? Yeah.
Maybe the Mayan men lactated. Maybe past civilizations.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a possibility.
And they've been trying to do the
into that.
The cave paintings. They couldn't get like a rock small enough to
to get the nipples in.
Yeah, don't worry, Steve, it's fine. They'll find out eventually.
You're all right, Steve, honestly. So that was nice. But I thought the list I was going to do this week, inspired by a conversation I was having with a friend. It was quite dull. But the list is going to be things your gender is supposed to like that you just don't get at all. So sort of gender stereotypes that you just go, why is that? And for me, it's, as a woman, the thing, you know, to be a proper woman, you're meant to like shoes, be obsessed with shoes, have a shoe fetish, da-da-da. And it absolutely leaves me. I don't understand. I mean, I sort of get, like, oh, clothes are nice and makeup. I never used to wear makeup, but now that I'm over 40, I've realised why makeup exists. It's because of women over 40 and men over 40 as well. I have never understood just generally the hysteria about shoes, but high heels particularly. I've never been able to wear them, never wanted to wear them. I understand why they're appealing to men, and I guess that is, you know, why they have become appealing to women, because they make your legs longer and they make you stick your bum out, apparently. apparently that's why. So you look sexually available. I've always indicated my sexual availability by having sex with people. That's the way that I have tended to show that I'm interested. Anyway, it's one of those things that it just set me thinking that for me, it's shoes. Whatever it might be for you people out there. And it can, and again, gentlemen can join in with this if they wish, because my husband, what always happens, right? So Justin is my husband, and other men always say to me, oh, so what football team does your husband support? And I say, oh, he doesn't support a football team, he's not into football. And then they always go, ah, rugby man, is he? And then you go, no, he's not. Cricket lover, is he? Cricket, it's cricket. He's going, no, he doesn't really enjoy cricket. And then they will go to
one more desperate chess? Chess, not chess?
The Swedish beach game, Coop. Is it Coop? Is that what he likes? Does he like tiddlywinks, anything?
Do you want to throw some waste into a basket that's far away?
Now, that is a good sport. I would watch that if that was televised. That's my kind of sport. But yeah, I am more, he has absolutely zero interest in sport. Which finds it baffling and finds it absolutely extraordinary that anyone is interested in sport, and consequently has quite a hard time from some other men. So, you know, if anyone has a thing, I mean, including, I can broaden this out to Amanda and Sophie in the studio, and indeed to anyone in the wider world, but anything that, you know, makes you not a proper woman or not a proper man by society's standards.
But I completely agree with the shoe thing, except now I've discovered, I've been alive for 26 years, and I've discovered trainers. I've the first time I wore a pair of like good trainers, I was like, this is, why have they kept this from us? Because I've worn
comfort
like horrible comfort.
Oh, right. It's, oh, now you're talking.
It feels like walking on air. That's why they call it Nagapauri.
Like, yes.
But it feels amazing. I was like, why have I been walking in these horrible boots that, like, it's hurtful? And every time I've taken off a pair of shoes for 26 years, it's just been like pain and blood everywhere.
Yeah.
And then I wear these trainers. I was like, and you get them in different colours. I bought like four pair of trainers in 3 weeks.
You've got a shoe thing now.
Now I do. But like comfortable, nice shoes.
I will allow that. No, I will allow people to like shoes generally, but I particularly will allow, if it's on comfort grounds, then you score double points in my universe.
Cause definitely, because I but also my feet are a size 8, so I've never been able to get nice shoes. I have like the special rack in the shoe store where they always look at you and go, oh. I mean, we have these over here, and it's always like rubber sandals and stuff like that. You go, oh, okay, no, I'm just gonna.
It's
gonna go bare feet. But now it's like you can get trainers in every size. Yeah, they're comfortable.
And they are unisex. That is the good thing about, because I wear boys' trainers quite a lot. Boys' shoes generally are good for me because I have the opposite problem. I have tiny feet, which is actually, I say the opposite problem, not a problem, an asset, an absolute bloody boon. Yeah. Because kids' shoe sales are very good as well. Because I wear the shoes that teenage boys don't want. So that's where I get.
Have you got a pair of heelys or wheelies?
Do you know? I never have, but that's an absolutely excellent idea, Amanda. Well done. Let's add that to our shopping list. Let's add that to the list. Because you're not a shoe fan either, Amanda, are you?
Not at all. No, as I was saying to you today, when you were talking about the subject of shoes, it was about 5 days ago, I had to sort of admit that the pair of shoes that I've been wearing every single day for 2.5 years, I couldn't wear them anymore. I've taken them to shoe menders and they can't do anything about it. I've had to put them to sleep.
Oh,
I had to put them down.
It's a sad day.
It's a sad day. And so I've been wearing trainers for a week and I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
I really can't get excited about shoes.
No.
I hate going shopping.
Do you know what's the awful thing that's going to happen to me imminently, and I know it, is the Marks & Spencer's foot glove. If you're not familiar with the Marks & Spencer's foot glove, they are shoes for old ladies because they are just comfortable. And when you get to a point where you don't care what your feet look like, I think actually trainers are probably the more sensible way to go. But the M&S foot glove, it's like, it does what it says. It's an absolute bloody boon. Everything's a bloody boon today. They are lovely, like Cornish pasty shoes. You know, they sort of, they look a little bit like they're made of pastry. Anyway, they're good. Okay. I tell you what, the thing I loved about when we were talking about it earlier, Amanda, was that you said you've been wearing the same shoes for the last however many years, probably as long as I've known you. And I have never noticed what those shoes were.
No.
So it's all wasted on me.
No.
So yes, anyone who has any other things like that you think, why do people make a big fuss, then you can join our weird club of non-shoe loving women or non-sport loving men like my husband. Do you know, I did a piece for the Daily Mail or the Mail on Sunday or something, and I can only apologise and justify it by saying I had an Edinburgh show to promote, but it was this feature where they go, I can't remember what it's called, but anyway, they come around to your house and they take pictures of your favourite things,
right,
and then they put them in the magazine kind of dotted around with a little quote from you about why they're so special to you. And the lovely woman, this really nice woman, came around with a photographer and they tried to, and because I looked at other ones and it's always women, and it is always, these are my lovely shoes and these are my lovely bags and these, and so but we did end up like, I kind of went, oh, okay, well, I have got like some shoes and I've got a bag, and
you can have
a look at it, because like my mum gave me my grandmother's handbag, which I've never used, but it's like a white handbag, so they said, oh, that would be nice, because like all the stuff I was giving them, they were like, well, we can't put that no, they're ugly shoes, that's not, you know, it's like, it's an aspirational lifestyle magazine, but they were very sweet about it. But so I ended up, it was sort of, I compromised slightly, but there were still quite a lot of slightly odd, like things Justin had bought me drunk off eBay, loads of Peanuts memorabilia and anyway, and various things. And then for some reason in it, I told a story about how, well, the story of how Justin and I got together, which was I went to see him in a show where he was wrestling naked with another man on the floor and, they, you know, it was love and everything. And anyway, they put this in the mail on Sunday and then it goes online. And I looked one day at the online comments that people had put, and it was so... In fact, I'll try and find it. During our next song, I'll find it, and I will tell you what the comments were. But basically, yeah, along the lines of, this woman doesn't deserve to call herself a woman. She doesn't have nice feminine things. Women should have nice things. Why don't they have... She's got no nice things. So, anyway, so that's the kind of rubbish.
That's a compliment.
Woman. I know, exactly. The Daily Mail commenters despised me and I was glad. So, yeah. Now, shall we have a little record?
Yeah, let's have a record. It's a tenuous link to the first story that we were talking about.
Royal. So, should we guess? Is it Sam, Your Number One by Princess?
No, I would have liked to have put a Princess track on, actually, but it's actually 50 Foot Queenie by PJ Harvey.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes, good.
Lucy Porter on FUBAR Radio.
We always put it at the end of the sort of nice, when there's been a sort of nice quiet end to a record, we always like to wake you up with a screaming Ali shouting Lucy Porter. Good, yes, I just looked on my Daily Mail thing and there is actually, I'm sure there were more comments, but there's just someone going, weird, so weird. Weird. So, because I'd forgotten, I did put a spoon rest. We got so desperate looking around the house that eventually it was like, there's a spoon rest that I got in Portugal. Do you want that? Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, at least it's colourful. Anyway, good. So we are back with the lovely Sophie Hagen or Hagen, sorry.
Oh, you can say both. Yeah. I guess you go with Hagen.
Hagen, yeah. Good.
You're feeling that more?
That's what I've gone for, yeah. Because otherwise, you know when you ask someone how you pronounce their name and then they tell you, but you've stuck with the pronunciation.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
It was right. My friend Shelley all the time, it's Shelley Rubens.
Shall
Dean.
I? Oh.
Yeah. It's actually Penelope, but I insist.
It's Steve.
Shelley Rubenstein.
He's angry with us.
Shelley Rubenstein. I always say Shelley Rubenstein and it's Dean and blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
And she claims it's racist. Good. So I want to get into our brilliant women bit, which is the life of a great woman. I think we'll call that. We haven't really got strand titles, but it is kind of it's a thing we sort of do every week. And I have nominated someone, and Sophie has nominated someone. I shall do mine, and then you can do yours. So my great woman from history this week is Nellie Bly. And the reason that I have picked Nellie Bly is because I was reminded of her existence by a lot of people celebrating what would have been her 151st birthday, which is, we missed it last year is what we're saying, isn't it?
Yes.
What we're saying is, do you know Nellie Bly, right? If we'd done this last year, this would have been amazing, and now it's like 151st. But we've got to wait another 49 years until it's 200, so let's just do it. Nellie Bly, who basically, and I am going to make this claim, even if it's incorrect, invented investigative journalism. I'm going to make that claim even if I can't say it as well. She was a pioneering investigative journalist. She was born and then she died. She was,
now a song.
She was born in a year. Anyway, but when she was 21 years old, she started out being an investigative journalist and had an amazing career where her major achievements were that she tried to do 80 days around the world. She tried to recreate Jules Verne's 80 days around the world, and she did it in 72, I think. And, you know, this is at a time when women travelling the world were both unsafe and frowned upon. So she was 22, and she pitched a story to her editor. So basically, the reason she got into journalism was that her local paper, someone had written a disparaging article about women. And as a young girl, she wrote back to the paper and said, I think this is disgusting. And she replied to this misogynist article, and the editor was impressed and hired her. And she developed a passion for journalism. And by the age of 22, she was so ambitious that she said to her editor, said to her, "Have you any ideas today?" "One," I answered slowly, fearing he would laugh at me. "I want to go around the world in 80 days or less." I was informed that if there was such a trip, I would be the one to go. One stormy evening, I was called into the office. "Can you start around the world day after tomorrow?" I was asked. "I can start this moment if necessary," I answered. So she got one dress. She got a heavy dress, a light gown, a toothbrush, a raincoat, some flannel underwear and not much else. And then she went off around the world and did it in 72 days, which is fairly extraordinary. Yeah. And then she also... brilliantly decided she wanted to do, she'd heard about abuse at a mental institution and she wanted to investigate it, so she pretended to be mad, she had herself committed, and she lived undercover in an insane asylum and documented all the terrible abuses of the women there and effected change and got it shut down, I think. So she was genuinely the kind of journalist that our journalists of today should look at and hang their head in shame. And it's one of those great lives that makes you feel unbelievably inadequate the more you read about her. And she died when she was 57. So there we go. That's my great woman.
She's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think just if it was only the going around the world in 72 days thing, because I find it, I don't travel well. I'll be honest with you, I don't think I could do it even in 2015 with our creature comforts, let alone in the early part of the 20th century. No, thank you. So that's my great woman. Would you care, Sophie, to share yours?
Yes. When I was asked to find a great woman, I was very excited about going to look for a great woman. When I was reminded that I had to find a great woman, which was 2 minutes ago. I remembered.
Do you know what?
I remembered how much I wanted to find. But there is a woman, and this is how my mind.
I was so impressed because I was like, she hasn't got any notes, right? She's just, this is obviously some passionate.
No panic in my eyes.
No, I do.
There is a woman. There is a woman. But I could have probably found a better one. But this is the first one I thought of 2 minutes ago. And she's not, I'm not going to say great. Okay. But she was a woman in a male field.
Yeah.
And she did...
She was a woman, that's a star.
She was a woman. Okay, it's a guy, but...
yeah. But a really effeminate guy. Yeah. Really. Didn't like sport.
No, she was... She did... It's a Danish... It's the only ever female Danish serial killer.
Ooh.
And she... Yeah, so which is obviously not good. Like, she's not good, but here's the thing. Her name is Dagmar Overby, and she was in the 1800s, and she... It was when women used to sell their kids. You know, when you couldn't afford to have a child, you'd sell. She would get the sell it, buy it. She would buy the kids. So you'd, she would pay. They had to pay for her to take the kid. That's how it works.
Okay.
So she got a lot of money and a lot of kids. So she just killed the kids and then kept the money. Good businesswoman. I mean, I know it's not, you know, it's obviously not a good thing, but
she had a business plan and she stuck to it.
But what happened, obviously she got caught because she was a bit lazy, and there was a woman who had sold a kid, gave away her kid, and then she was getting the money. And then on her way home, she regretted having given up her baby, so she went back, and Dagmar Overby was like,
I broke that one.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, they called the police, and they came and discovered all of these. Anyways, but because of that, that started this whole social system in Denmark where you can't have, like, money in these kind of cases with children, and the society and the councils and the state are very much involved with everything that has to do with kids. So this became like a very, very, like they were very sensitive about everything to do with kids. So
because they must have looked like twats going, we've been sort of letting people buy children and kill them, haven't we? Yeah. Have we been doing, buying them. Yeah, we've been letting people get money to take children that they can then kill. Yeah, that is a bit of a faux pas.
Yeah.
That is,
so I would say, but you know,
it's a fascinating boring life is what it is.
It's an interesting story how that could actually lead to something.
I love the way you set her up as a woman in a man's world.
She was not invited to the serial killer dinner.
No, there's a lot of
when they went on tour. She wasn't as much fun.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, old, you know,
always talking about children.
Well, the problem is, you know, it's just the hours for the female serial killers, isn't it? They just don't.
You can't mix it with a family.
No, they lack commitment. They lack the commitment. It's, you know, more of that. Gosh, well, that is interesting, isn't it? I feel like that's actually maybe something we should adopt now as a theme. Good woman, bad woman. Because I like that. I'm looking at Amanda going, can we do that? Can we do that?
Yeah,
can we
absolutely.
Have that?
Why not?
Actually,
I'm writing it down. Now,
what you sort of realise, and I hesitate to say this, but I will, bad women often more interesting. I mean, bad people, not just women, but bad people.
Yeah,
fascinating.
Something.
Because you do think she, I mean, you know, that how at what point when you're burying a child that someone's paid you to take, how many do you do where you sort of, before you go, this is really bad.
I hope someone tuned in just now.
I know.
I gave it a chance.
Yes. The sensitivity of FUBA, I think, to be honest, this isn't the worst thing that's ever happened on FUBA.
Absolutely.
I don't
no
think
way.
It really is. Yes, well, I feel we can't go to a record now because we've gone dark. We've got to
well,
go to...
We
but
sort of
can, I, to, I have to, can I give you another... This is like a little bonus, woman. So to bring us back to good women.
Go on.
Okay, so this is someone who has died at 92 this week, I think. Certainly this month. She was Mary Doyle Keith. Now, I am interested in Mary Doyle Keith for a number of reasons. I will tell you who she was and then we can discuss. So Mary Doyle Keith, the model for Norman Rockwell's iconic 1943 Rosie the Riveter painting that symbolised the millions of American women who went to work on the home front during the Second World War, has died. She was 92. Keith died Tuesday in Simsbury, Connecticut, after a brief illness, said her daughter Mary Ellen Keith. She grew up in Arlington, Vermont, where she met Rockwell, who lived in West Arlington, and posed for his painting when she was a 19-year-old telephone operator. The painting was on the cover of the Saturday Evening Post on the 29th of May, 1943. Although Keith was petite, Rockwell's Rosie the Riveter had large arms, hands and shoulders. The painting shows the red-haired Rosie in blue jean work overalls sitting down with a sandwich in her left hand, her right arm atop a lunchbox with the name Rosie on it, a rivet gun on her lap and her feet resting on a copy of Adolf Hitler's manifesto Mein Kampf. The entire background is a waving American flag. Now, so I was reading, and I've read all of that. That's from The Guardian. In fact, no, I think it's from the BBC. Anyway, it's from somewhere. And it's by, it's from the Associated Press, actually. And I read all of that and thought, you know, interesting woman. You know, she just happened to be, she was paid like £100 to model for this painting and she became an icon, a national icon. But what I found interesting about it was that Rosie the Riveter, I had always thought was a completely different painting. And this is going to be hard on the radio to describe, but I always thought Rosie the Riveter was a woman flexing her bicep, wearing a red spotted knotted handkerchief. But apparently that picture is called, I think it's called We Can Do It, and is not by Norman Rockwell. And people started to call it Rosie the Riveter in recent years, but it's actually the wrong painting. So I think it's an excellent pub quiz question for the picture round. Anyone who's listening and wants to do a pub quiz, do the picture for We Can Do It and say, what is this picture called? And 9 people out of 10 will put Rosie the Riveter. And I do, what I also didn't realise is that Rosie the Riveter was a kind of a folk heroine predating this picture anyway, that this sort of the idea of Rosie the Riveter as this kind of woman in a man's world, woman in the male workforce, had been around for quite a long time. But an inspirational, beautiful painting, by the way, the actual Norman Rockwell one, the actual Rosie the Riveter, because I mean the We Can Do It one is good, but Rosie the Riveter, if you've never seen it, treat yourselves to a quick Google of that, because, or search whatever engine you wish, because it is absolutely stunning, a stunning picture. And it's interesting because Norman Rockwell apologised to Mary Doyle Keith, the model, for making her bigger than she was, and he said, I'm sorry, I've had to make you bigger to make you more striking. And you go, yes, that is the thing. It's, you know, she's not a timid little woman. She's a big, imposing, properly muscled woman. So so yes, go and have a look at that picture. Research Nellie Bly, and also let's give us the name of the horrible Danish woman.
Dagmar Overby.
Okay, there we go. And you can read the horrible story of the horrible, horrible woman that Sophie brought up and took us to a dark place that we didn't need to go. I started off talking about the royal baby and now we've come to this. It's a terrible, you know.
It's almost full circle.
It is terrible. So there we go. Right, shall we have a, let's have a record now.
Yeah, actually, Karen O, a couple of days ago, wrote an ode for to celebrate Nellie Bly's 151st birthday.
How marvellous.
Yeah, and it's called Take Us All Around the World, and I'm going to play it for you right now.
Oh, thank you, Amanda. That's very good.
Here you go.
I like you too, Rilo Kiley. It's a lovely. So that's from our album of the week. First of all, we had Karen O from the AAS, who I also love, doing her Nellie Bly tribute song. And then that was Portions for Foxes, which I think possibly the best song from our album of the week. Contentious, I don't know. I also like Does He Love You, but then that's because I'm a bit sentimental. Anyway, we'll play that one later on, you can see. But anyway, Portions for Foxes. Now, Rilo Kiley, I have chosen this as our album of the week. I think it's an amazing record. Didn't realise how old it was and I'm now feeling a little bit embarrassed. I thought, oh, I'll pick something a bit more contemporary. 2004. Where have I been for the last 11 years musically? And the answer is not around at all. I have no idea what's going on in contemporary music, but I'm trying to learn, okay? I'm getting there. I'm getting back into it. But yeah, so this was... I mean, obviously, it's a band fronted by a woman, so we're having it. There are men involved, and bloody good men they are too. Blake Sennett, the songwriting partner of Jenny Lewis, who is one of my favourite pop stars of all time. I love Jenny Lewis's songs. I love all of Rilo Kiley's albums, but particularly this one, More Adventurous, which is our album of the week. And, yeah, I think it did make me think that, yeah, Jenny Lewis is probably the last pop star that I really passionately wanted to be. And that hasn't happened for a while. I don't know who... there will be someone else now that I've started to get back into listening to music a bit more. But, yeah, that's the last one I've really... Oh, actually, Kate Bush, always. I mean, if I could be anyone in any circumstance, it would be Kate Bush. But Jenny Lewis was probably the last sort of new pop crush, please can I be her, that I had. Anyone got any in the studio? Who would you?
Oh,
be any pop star? It can be male or female. I'm not going
to. PJ Harvey.
Yeah.
Just mostly because you get to bang Nick Cave while he probably cries.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, you Bonnie Tyler, because in my head I sound like her whenever I'm sick.
So I'm already
almost Bonnie Tyler now.
I like the fact that you've picked a sort of something you think is slightly achievable. Yeah, I sort of sound a bit like her when I'm ill, so yes, we'll go.
Better not aim too high.
You can cultivate the Welsh.
But back when she was probably, let's face it, banging Meatloaf.
Yeah. It's a lot about
Wasn't she? I mean, look at the video. They have a connection.
That chemistry.
If she hasn't done that, I will never forgive her.
She's Dead Ringer for Love, was that her?
Yeah,
that's a
maybe
very
I just
good...
want to bang Meatloaf and Nick Cave. Maybe it has nothing to do with
that. Maybe what you need is a Meatloaf Nick Cave sandwich. That's what you... I cannot imagine any circumstances in which that would happen, but it's a wonderful dream.
But if it ever happens, I'd be like, listen.
God.
Do you know Lucy Porter?
You really need to
wait, Instagram, guys.
Lucy is going to want to see this.
She said it wouldn't happen, and here we are.
Well, if FUBAR can make anything happen,
let's tweet
them. Dreams come true. I would, Nick Cave, I'm totally with you. Meatloaf, I've never thought about, but I'm going to give it some thought, Sophie, and I'm going to see.
They're both on passionate. Twitter, so I'm going to tweet them.
If you could tweet them and tell them that they are required in the Holloway Road, London, right now. Is Nick Cave still in Brighton? I was stalking him mildly for a while. I knew where he lived in Brighton, and I used to, any time I was in Brighton, always just have a little walk past. You know, just, it's rude not to, isn't it? Rude not to walk past his house if you're in the area.
You're going to give me the address, right?
I'm totally going to give you the address. Yeah.
Well, we're going to need together. It for the plan we're on now.
Anyway, let's head down after the show. Yeah. So we'll be getting the train. Nick, if you are still in Brighton, if you're not, don't worry. We'll just be, whoever's bought your house is going to get a visit from us. Yeah. No, I don't. Oh, pop threesomes, you see. We've gone very quickly from who do you want to be to what
strong female
pop
role models.
Threesome should you have? it's a question I do find fascinating. Amanda, do you either of those questions? Pop star you'd like to be?
I think that, well, the last kind of really big crush I've had, either kind of musically or wanted to be a part of, was LCD Sound System, who are a band I absolutely just love everything about. Huge crush on
if
James
there
Murphy.
A sound system,
LCD Sound System.
Aren't there loads of them then?
There are quite a few.
Well, you could sneak in.
Well, there's Nancy Wang, who I would really want to trade places with, because she's incredibly talented and she gets to work with James Murphy every day, who I think is the biggest, cuddliest teddy bear of a man.
Oh God, we've gone there again, haven't we? What, you women, are you on heat?
It's the spring.
Wrong?
It's the spring.
Yes, I suppose a young woman's fancy turns to threesomes with. Well, who else would you have then? You've got to have someone else as well as James Murphy.
As well, in my ideal threesome, yeah, Jason Donovan, so I can go back to my 13-year-old self and tick that one off the list.
Goodness me. Desires just, then and now.
I've tweeted Meatloaf and Nick Cave and asked them to show up immediately.
Fabulous. Well, it will be awkward if Meatloaf comes, because I can't, you know.
Oh, then you have to live up to the promises.
Well, I've said I'm not sure whether I want to bang him or not. And I mean, if he turns up, expect it. I mean, you know, it's going
to
be awkward, isn't it?
That will be quite awkward.
It's going
to
be awkward.
You might have to do it anyway, Lucy.
I tell you what I'll do. I'll nip out and make a cup of tea. I'll say I'm making a phone call. I don't know if you ever did this when you were teenagers, and like, you know, you're with your girlfriend and you're trying to decide who's going to get off with the boy, and you're like, I'll go out and see if he likes you. I'll go out and make a phone call. Then if you get off with him, that's fine. If he doesn't want to get off with you, I'll come back anyway. Too much about my teenage years, I would say. God, yeah, because my three. It's funny, isn't it? Yes, I would have always Elvis Costello. It would have been.
Really?
Possibly Elvis Costello and Nick Cave, but that would be quite a depressing
wouldn't it?
I think you're doing right, Sophie, because you've got Meatloaf to cheer you up, you know.
Wobble around a bit and then Cave can write a song.
Do you know what would happen? It turned out that actually Nick Cave would be the cheery one and Meatloaf would be all morose and depressed and would be the one who cries.
Yeah, he'd be like, afterwards. You think Nick is harder than me? But like, oh, Jesus, Meatloaf.
You're so
Jesus
mean.
Christ.
Oh,
I've already said you were kind of hot. Oh, another threesome. Roger Waters and Steven Tyler.
Okay. Mm.
Oh, really?
That handles like daddy issues.
Yeah.
Mostly daddy issues.
Well, it does really. And then you get to be Liv Tyler for
no.
Oh, God, that was bad.
What
I meant is,
where are we going with this program now?
Really, really bad.
Nowhere good. I know.
You're
going to
take it then.
How many minutes is it till?
It's two minutes
till booze.
Just under.
The problem is also we've moved the show earlier, so booze has now crept back, because it used to be booze was at 8 o'clock. We've now moved it to 7. I'm just worried we're going to keep creeping back. What happens if we get the breakfast show? What happens if they make us come
then
in at breakfast?
Then we have a Bloody
time?
Mary.
Then we do. We have a refreshing eye-opener. Yes. Good. Well, I'm glad that we let that descend into the
incest.
Who we would now I let's take actually someone else who I love, and this is not a historical figure, this is a contemporary person who I read an interview with this week, and it just reminded me how much I love her, and I thought let's talk about her. Rebel Wilson. I love her work. And I also loved her interview, because she was quite, sort of quite arsy in a very good way, in a way that women are increasingly becoming confident to be, I think, in that she was sort of moaning a bit about Hollywood and, the kind of pull-out quote from it was, comedy has always been a bit of a boys' club until now. And sort of saying the thing that we all think, which is... So I've done three big movies with men, she says. These are talented, strong-minded males, but you have to find a way to work that system. You aren't being paid much and you start at a disadvantage with the script. Usually you don't have any cool jokes and you're there to support the male actor. And I thought, yeah.
You know, it kind of reminded me of what you said about the article with all your stuff, like how you often you're in situations with like filming or photographs or something and they kind of want to like, oh, can you just, like, I did a photo shoot recently where they were very like, oh, try and look sexy. And I was like, have you ever asked a male comedian to look sexy in their photos? Like, it's a comedy.
No, it's a comedy show.
Wait.
The men are all trying to. They're all running to go, can I take
start
my
looking
shirt off? And,
put it on your shirt, Jeff Leach.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you opened a can of worms there. Yes, I mean... I know.
No, but like,
it's so
don't you get
true,
that?
Yes,
like,
yes,
everyone
yes.
you've done comedy work, and they're kind of going, yeah. "Oh, can you just try and be a bit more smiley, a bit more?"
Yeah. And you do feel like, you know, the wanting to be nice and get through things part of you sort of takes over, and then you think, "I know that I will be labelled a difficult, awkward bitch if I object to this." I actually, the worst example of that, and I will never get over the awful burning shame I feel about this was I was doing a TV show and they gave me a joke, and I, you know, it was one of those panel shows and I'd written loads of my own stuff and they were sort of quite undermining generally about the stuff that I'd written, and then they kind of said, oh, but you should do this joke, and it was a really quite unpleasant, slightly misogynist joke. And I think they really thought, oh, it's a brilliant joke, and they wanted a woman to legitimise it by doing it. And I sort of knew that was what was happening, but then I kind of felt like I'd been a bit difficult in other ways anyway, and so I ended up doing it. And then, you know, just have, from that day to this, always thought, oh, that was an absolute golden moment when I should have stood up for my principles and I didn't.
But you don't want, because then you think, oh, they're not going to book me back, or they're going to think I'm old. Like, I think one of the simplest situations is when you do like a comedy show on TV and you have to sit in makeup for about an hour and a half.
Yes.
And you can hear the men like outside of the makeup room like talk and get ready and prepare themselves, and you're just staring at like some woman who's putting fake eyelashes on you. You're like, come on, that's not...
Yeah, maybe not being in curlers, isn't it? But then actually, tell you what, I did a panel show last night, which, in fact, it was QI. I was sort of starting to do that, and then I went, should I say that? I've done it.
They'll find out somehow.
Somehow it gets out. These things always do. But I was on QI last night, and that is lovely because the makeup room is just where everyone hangs out.
Oh, brilliant.
And it's really... Because also, it's actually much nicer to be in the makeup room.
Yeah.
As an environment than being in the green room where there's agents and executive producers who are all a bit, you know.
Yeah.
And the makeup lady Sue on QI is so lovely and that is much nicer. And that's exactly that, because you don't feel like you're then being...
dragged away.
Yes,
to
be prettified and, and, you know, because the men only ever have a coating of powder, and then that's them done.
And the makeup artist is like, how do you want to be makeup? How do you want to look like human? Yeah. Just make me look like a human being.
Yes, make me not disappear on camera. And other than that, it's absolutely. But then, it's interesting as well, because I think in this Rebel Wilson interview as well, she was talking about this, you know, the way that women are expected to look, and funny women, and that people tie themselves up in knots. Sort of going, oh, you know, but pretty women can't be funny. Oh, but then, you know, but then, and we can only laugh at women who aren't conventionally pretty. But then we sort of want the women who are on television to be beautiful, and, you know, and this is the whole thing of, like, you go on a panel show and they obviously want you to be eye candy and hilarious and threatening, you know, and unthreatening and yet assertive, and in a way that you do think, well, the guys don't get all the, you know, no one thinks, oh, we better have, you know, hot guys on. Because, you know, off the record, someone told me that one of the panel show producers said, you know, about all the men, is he funny, and all the women, is she hot, you know, for comedians, which absolutely sickens you. But, it's just... Because also the whole sort of fat-shaming thing Rebel Wilson touches on as well, and about how, you know, on the one hand, she's had it... You know, it was good that she was unlike anyone else that her agent had, but at the same time, she was like, well, they never want me to play a romantic lead. It sort of limits what you do, and it is, you know, I have noticed. It's funny having been, as we discussed last week, I've been everything from a size 6 to a size 14, and being when you're at the sort of heavier end of the spectrum, people do sort of treat you different. I think the people do think you're going to be funnier, but then they're a bit more scared of putting you on television, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, you get it. So, I mean, I've for those of you who don't know who I am, I assume everyone does.
I'm the Evelyn Mock, that's who she is.
I'm a size 2022 on a good day. And no, I get, because I have like extremely skinny, conventionally beautiful friends. And their worlds are amazing. Like when I hear them talk about how they think the world works, it's incredible. Like I was on the phone with my friend. I said, "Oh, I have to pee." She said, "Oh, just go into like any pizza place." I said, "No, they don't have public toilets." She's like, "You can just borrow their toilet." I'm like, "No, normal people can't do that."
That's so funny.
I've had bosses of mine who have been like pregnant, like completely pregnant. They've been running into like pizza stores, going, "Can I please borrow your toilet?" And they're like, "No." Then I've seen my blonde, beautiful friend go in and be, "Can I put you?" Like, "Yes." Here you go. I put out the red carpet for you. Please, urinate on our toilet. So they have this completely like my friend. This is the most insane story I've ever heard about like in this context. My friend who's like extraordinarily beautiful, but she also exudes like brilliance, like she's amazing. She was at a party, realized she'd forgotten her wallet, went into the street, got a cab, drove home, picked her wallet up, got back in the cab, got back to the party and said, "How much do I owe you?" And he said, "I'm not a cab."
Whoa!
It was a random guy who'd been like, "Oh my god,
I'll
take you wherever you want to go, just you can leave the car now." It's just been an honor being in your presence. I can't even get a regular cab. Oh my god, like, it's incredible. People don't really realize how actually like not being able to shop in a regular store if you're over a size 16, 14, 16, I guess. It's quite funny in some way. It's easier for me to be friends with men than my conventionally beautiful friends, because they every time they become friends with a guy, he's always romantically or sexually interested in her. Where I'm so fortunate that no men want to fuck me. So I got some beautiful friendships.
I think Nick Cave and Meatloaf are rushing to the studio to disprove that theory, if you don't mind.
They've answered yet.
But yeah, it is that weird thing, isn't it? But all the conventionally beautiful women don't feel beautiful, and they're all sort of as tormented as anybody else, you know. Whatever weight I've been, I've never been any happier or less happy, really. But it does. I think audiences do. I remember someone once saying to me, the problem with being a female comedian is when the minute you walk on stage, all the men in the audience are thinking, would I have sex with her? And all the women in the audience are thinking, would my partner have sex with her? So I always used to open by telling them that and then saying, right, hands up, who wants to have sex with me? Let's just get it out in the open.
Because that's also what we're thinking. Who here?
Yeah, exactly. If we could just cut to the chase, we could probably save all of us 20 minutes here.
No one really cares about jokes, do we, guys?
No. Exactly. But then because I think men do get into comedy to get laid a lot more than women do. You know, I mean, it certainly wasn't a conscious motivating factor for me. And it luckily, because it didn't really. This is what Rebel Wilson was saying. She said, but guys don't like funny women. And it's sort of quite depressing that she is saying that. And I think, when I was single, I kind of felt that as well. But then luckily, I found someone who did like a woman to be funny, and it was fine. So now,
but they do exist. It's just like I was. I don't know. There's a chance Evelyn has spoken about this because we did an open mic together, me and Evelyn Mark, the bitch we mentioned before.
Never say her name in the studio again. Yeah,
I do kind of love her, anyways. So we've done an open mic, and I had this horrible joke I was trying out where I would like gag on the microphone and pretend it was a penis because I'm very original like that, very clean material. So I'd go like, and then, "Oh, thank you very much, good night." And then that was in the first half. So we went downstairs to the bar. We had a few drinks. And then two men came over, started flirting with us. We were like, oh, my god, non-comedians. Let's get laid. We're going to get laid with these guys. But then when they asked us what we did, we didn't want to say comedians because we've tried that before. And, men run away.
Yes.
So we just like, oh, we're students. We study French. Da-da-da. Like, the most attractive thing we can think of.
Yes.
And they were like all over. We were like sitting. They had their arms around us. We were like, oh, my god, we're going to get laid. Oh, my god. Like, we were so excited. High-fiving under the table and everything. And they didn't even look that bad. And I was making the guy laugh. Like, I was making him cry with laughter. And I was like, oh, my god, he likes me even though I'm funny. And then the show ended upstairs. The audience came down. Four men walked up to our table, looked at me and said, oh, my god, your blowjob was amazing. And the guy's arm just disappeared from around me, and he moved away, and it was like happening in slow motion. And then he pointed at his friends and went, "My friends all agree." I was like, "Stop, just stop, stop." And I was like, wait, I'm a comedian, and this is not what it looks like. And then the guy was like, "Oh, I thought you had problems with men. It doesn't look like it." And then the man just started walking away.
Stop it. I thought the punchline to that story was going to be that when he thought you were a prostitute, he was still interested. But then when he found out you were a comedian,
I think he would have preferred that if I'd just gone, no, I'm a prostitute. No feelings involved. He would have been like, oh, thank God. But a comedian.
A comedian, isn't it? I've had the awful sort of people say, oh God, I feel sorry for your husband. Oh,
really?
If not in an unpleasant way, in a sort of just how awful must it be to be a man who's married to a comedian. Like, even if a gig has gone particularly well, I think even more so, that they're like, oh God, it must be awful for him not being able to be the funny one. Because it's such a British male thing, isn't it, of wanting to be the funny guy.
I think it's international. I think it's everywhere. Thing. It's just like the male stereotype that they have to be funny and we have to be cutesy and quiet, preferably.
Yes. Well, you see, I think this is why you go, let's celebrate people like Rebel Wilson who are being funny. And, it's hard as well, isn't it? Because when you do read interviews with very successful women moaning about the fact that they can't, that they're single and they can't get laid, and you go, God, what hope is there really? I mean, she's amazingly talented, she's brilliant, she's hilarious, she's absolutely beautiful. Anyway, good. Everything we've talked about has come dark and
I feel like
depressing.
It's my fault, a tiny bit.
Well, I don't know, maybe.
Tiny bit.
Is it a Danish trait that...
let's go with that.
Let's make it racist.
It's because of my race that I have to... It's just a part of my culture,
Your Northern European culture.
Yeah, you have to be very sensitive towards my culture, otherwise, I'm going to...
Yes, well, we are. We're very sensitive to whatever Danish culture is. I've got no idea, Amanda, have you?
Bacon?
Yeah. Number one. Yeah. Let's try and guess. Let's do a sort of family fortune. So the things people say about Denmark, bacon, Little Mermaid, that drugs place, Christiana Doodah Doodah.
Yeah, that's a place.
Christiana Doodah Doodah.
Christiana Doodah Doodah.
Yeah, good. I'm glad my pronunciation.
We pronounce it more like Doodah Doodah, but it's fine. That's fine.
See, that's sexy. That I would shaggy just for saying Doodah Doodah. What else?
Danish swirls.
Danish bam. Yeah, Danish pastries. But they're not actually Danish.
Oh, yeah. That's what we used to call them in our house anyway. Danish swirls.
The Danish swirl. They're not Danish. French, I think, are they?
Are they?
Danish people don't call them cinnamon stuff.
Yeah, sort of swirly buns.
Yeah, I don't think they're particularly...
Not so much, no?
I think most countries think it's theirs. Like in Norway, they're like, oh, you have to taste our cinnamon stuff. We're like, oh, we have those.
Yeah, no.
I think everyone thinks it's theirs.
Well, no, we think it's yours. So
you according to us, that is
you're
Danish.
Allowed to have the pastries.
So good, Norway.
Danish bands. Here's a question. Danish bands. I can think of a lot of Swedish bands, even a couple of Norwegian.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Of course.
Ravenettes.
They might actually be Danish. There's a good chance they might be Danish.
There's a good chance.
We have we won the Eurovision 1 year with the Fly on the Wings of Love.
Two old men.
The Olsen brothers, I think. Fly on the wings.
Two old guys.
Fly on the wings. They went up at the end. I'm a good singer. Yeah. And we have Sabia. I don't think people know them. Tim Christensen.
No. Look at the blank faces all around here. No. Tell you what we should have done if we were any sort of radio programme. We should have sourced some Danish, shouldn't we? I'm looking at you because you're the producer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm taking the full responsibility on my shoulders now.
You didn't get any Danish pastries. Is it booze o'clock? Oh my gosh. We have run so far. We've been having such fun that we have forgotten to drink. So it's going to be, there we go, can for you, can for me. And for Amanda.
Well, thank you.
Do join in at home. And especially if you're listening to the podcast and it's an indecent hour of the day to be drinking, we're giving you full endorsement whatever time of the day or night to crack open a tin. Shall we, while we enjoy the first sips, shall we play a record to cover that?
So we have our lovely guest choice today. Would you like to, Sophie, would you like to introduce
And I don't know what this is.
Let me think. Yeah, it's... Oh, what did I send you?
No,
I know this. It's Janis Joplin.
Yes.
With Little Girl Blue.
I feel.
The Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
You had to do it, Amanda, didn't you? You had to ruin the end of Janis Joplin. No, not ruin, sorry, if Ali's listening.
What are you saying about Ali?
I'm not saying it's... I'm just saying that it is... that, you know, as the... We were all thinking about Janis Joplin and we were thinking, gosh, only 27 when she died. And
part of the 27 Club, yes.
Part of the 27 Club, 1970. I've just looked that up. I couldn't actually remember it. Okay, you're looking very impressed.
I was very impressed.
But no, what a lovely record. Thank you, Sophie Hagen.
It's one of the best songs ever.
It is, isn't it?
It's amazing.
Such an amazing woman. And one of my favourite clips of all time, which feel free, listeners, to look this up, is there's a Dick Cavett show from America where Janis Joplin is being interviewed alongside Gloria Swanson and someone else, I think. And it's absolutely glorious. I love Janis Joplin. I love Gloria Swanson. The two of them really don't get on.
Right.
Really don't.
Oh, no.
It's quite awkward, but in a sort of beautiful way. And Janis Joplin, you do think, what a lovely, warm, childlike soul she was. And what a tragedy she was taken too soon. Anyway, but that's a gorgeous record, so thank you very much for that.
Welcome.
Now, shall we talk about... This is a thing from the week that slightly incensed, infuriated, but interested me. There was a boxing match, which I have no interest in boxing whatsoever. I know nothing, so I feel... Maybe I shouldn't comment, but I think the thing I can comment on is that a lot of people brought up the fact that Floyd Mayweather, who is one of the pugilists, has repeatedly beaten people up outside of the ring, and frequently women. And it sort of seems to be okay. And there is some weird thing about sports and domestic violence and violence against women. It just seems... It just absolutely astonishes me that this is still the case, that you can be violent and particularly towards women, and it's sort of okay. Like when I watched The Hangover and Mike Tyson came on, and you know, and it was one of those moments where I just, you know, me and my friend turned to each other and went, "Is that have they put Mike Tyson?" And there's not, you know, it's just fine. Apparently, it's just and. But, you know, in some ways with him, I suppose at least he had served his time. He had been convicted of his crime and served his time. Whereas Floyd Mayweather seems to have just... It's all rolled off him because he's such a successful and lucrative sports person. And I don't have anything much to add to the general disgust, but I just thought I would add some disgust.
No, I think you should. I mean, I'm not into sports as much either, but... It's like the soft spot for a lot of men, isn't it?
Mm.
It's like, no, of course you shouldn't hit women. But then, you know, he shouldn't be... They're like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, I mean, it's not that bad, is it? You're like, yeah, no, that's exactly what you signed up for when you said you didn't think women should be beaten up.
Yeah. It means women all the time.
But I'm not, particularly surprised. And that's just my stereotypical idea of sports. A lot of sports people is like, he doesn't strike me as the kind of person who would use his words.
Yeah.
If he got really angry.
Well, is that why people, you know, people sort of there's slightly patronising air to it, like with Mike Tyson as well. You know, if we go, well, you know, he was, you know, not very educated and from a poor background, and you know, used to using his fists. And, you know, you sort of go, yeah, but then an awful lot of people are from very poor backgrounds and not very well educated and, you know, and box and manage not to abuse women in horrific ways. Mm. And, yeah,
Yeah, it's definitely not, like, an excuse, but it's still, when this happens, that's why women have troubles reporting men when they do horrible things to them, because it's not really being taken seriously.
Yeah.
And now his ex-wife, I assume, or ex-girlfriend, has to sit and watch the game and find him on all of these like newspaper covers. It's not being... That's why you're scared. If something happens, you don't want to report it, because people are going to be like, well, Yeah, but, you know.
Yeah, but he's kind of powerful. Yeah. And that is exactly what's been happening over here, I suppose, with, you know, the all of our astonishment that powerful men do terrible things. Yeah. You know, powerful people do terrible things. The I tell you what might be quite an interesting and useful thing for us to discuss is what can you do if you violently object to something but that's in a sphere that you have no influence, interest or control over. So, I mean, it is that, well, how do I register my my disgust at the Floyd Mayweather situation, given that I had absolutely no intention of paying the whatever it was to Sky so that I could stay up until 4 a.m. and watch two men fighting for a short amount of time. I can't boycott it. Mm. I mean, you know, petitions. What we probably need to do is start getting really into boxing, except Floyd Mayweather. We could do that. Support nice, find nice boxers. Is that an option? Find a really nice boxer.
And we could extend it to all sports as well.
I mean, the problem is I don't like boxing as a, you know, as a thing. I did once, I was in a hotel doing an event and they were having a boxing match. They'd like, it was this ballroom of the hotel and they'd set up a boxing ring in there. And I sort of walked in and had a look and saw a punch being thrown. And I'm such a wuss that I felt really sick. And I'm like, whoa, there was
could
like
you
blood.
Hear it
and,
as well?
Yeah, and you could see people getting sprayed with, you know, whether it was sweat or blood or saliva or, God, you know, I wasn't going to hang around and take swabs. But it was, I found it really unpleasant. So, I mean, whereas like football, I don't mind football. I could go and watch football in order to support whoever didn't sign Ched Evans, or, you know, that sort of thing. But it's a slightly formless idea. We need to have some sort of economic influence. I think that's the only way, isn't it?
But also speaking up. Like, I strongly believe, like, you should, however you can, voice your opinion. Twitter, Facebook, on the radio. Like, there was the whole Protein World thing happening with that whole tube thing. Yeah. And Juliette Burton went, like, all in on it and tried to have like a debate with the people behind this horrible sexist body shaming advert. Mm-hmm. And now it's been banned. They got over 70,000 signatures online, which is not that many considering how many people mm-hmm. exist. Mm-hmm. But they have it banned now. Like, it does work. And if nothing else, then it's important for the women that this will affect. It's important that they see that other people are speaking up about it, because then they feel the support. Because if no one says anything, you know, it's just making noise.
Then we're back to the 70s again. I mean, that's exactly the problem that we had. Yeah, and actually, yes, it doesn't particularly matter if... Because a lot of people are saying, well, there's no point because the people who buy Protein World products will not care about any of this. But then it's like, well, actually, yes, it's not really for them. It's for women who are walking past that advert and feeling like this is...
Exactly.
You know, demeaning and difficult. But
yeah, and that's not the general opinion. No, there are people out there who are kind, good, clever people who are not like that.
Men who fancy funny women.
Seth.
And who...
We're all married.
I've got the only one. That's it.
That's what they all have in common. They love funny women and marriage, apparently. How many times I've heard that, like, oh, you know, I would, but, you know, I got a wife. Like,
no.
Oh, thank
you.
I'm so happy for you.
That is, my husband just follows you around to do that.
Oh yeah, say hi to him.
Oh, yeah. he'll be outside. Don't worry, you can say it yourself. In fact, maybe we should. Talking of harnessing the power of social media, as we were, I have been excited by your use of social media, Sophie Hagen, this evening. Can we talk about that? You have posted a video clip. And you tweeted, oh my God, it's gone viral.
Yeah.
And at that time, how many views had it had? Tell us the story anyway. Tell us the whole story of your clip.
Well, it's a comedian's rap battle I did in Edinburgh about a year ago now against comedian Jeff Leach, good friend of mine. He was, at least. and it's quite a spectacular rap battle because I destroy him. And
ooh, nice.
No, but I mean that I'm quite humble. I can be humble, but not in this. Like, that is me being humble because it's more than destroy.
Ooh,
and I posted it on my Facebook page, Sophie Hagen with an F, and then it had like 1,100 views. So I posted on my private profile and said, oh my God, it's gone viral. It has 9.6 million views. And people got really excited. Now it's like 1,900 views.
Brilliant.
So it's almost like it's working just to claim. You can see how many people have viewed it. Like, it's not like
I'm going to have a look right now. I'm going to have a look. that's brilliant. But yeah, so just claiming that, because that is the both the joy and the terrible thing about social media is that actually the appearance of success. There was a great Twitter spat going on between a man called Andy Dawson, who tweets as Profanity Swan, who is very funny, and he got into a sort of Twitter fight with a woman who had, now Louisa Zisman, I think is her name, and she'd won The Apprentice.
On The Apprentice, she won?
Or she was on The Apprentice or something.
Or she came second, I believe. She was one of the finalists. Yeah.
And they were having a fight on Twitter, and it got to, you know, and she had boasted about her multi-million pound businesses and all of this, and so he and so he went and did some research at Company's House, and it's, you know, you can be, you can get away with it, you know. I mean, obviously she is depicting herself as maybe a little bit more successful than she is, who knows, but you know, you can get away with that on social media, but then when if it goes wrong, it can go quite badly wrong.
Well, but it's I did Ray Peacock's show, which is obviously not as good as this one.
No.
And he had...
He'd admit that.
We'd gigged together like 3 days prior to that, and he took a photo, like just like a quick photo of my face, like with his iPad or his iPhone. And then he wrote on Twitter, posted the picture and said, "Oh my God, my iPad has been stolen from my brother's hospital."
Oh, I saw this. Yeah. Very
it
funny.
It was incredible. It was, very it was funny. So much fun. I did yesterday. I was gigging with James Dowdswell, and we were like, the backstage room was in a kitchen, and there was a photographer to take pictures of the show. And I said, "Okay, we're going to dress up in like having like the pots on our heads, like a really ridiculous picture with like all these kitchen equipment. We're going to do a goofy face, and then I want someone to take a picture of the photographer taking a picture of us." So I have like, you can see the photo. It's not going to work on radio.
Oh, very good.
So it's like a really silly photo of us in a kitchen posing in front of a camera. And then I just wrote, "Oh, finally, me and James are going to do our show, cooking up some jokes at Edinburgh this year. We're going to get the poster done, and people have been congratulating us on an amazing two-hander show." And you know, everyone's thinking that sounds like a horrible concept, but they're being like fake supportive. "Oh, that sounds great, cooking up some jokes. That sounds good. We can't wait to see that show." And they're all thinking, "Oh my God, it's going to be so bad. Let's go and see that. It's going to be such a bad show."
I know, but then now what happens when you are approached by a TV commissioner saying, "Here is the money to develop cooking up some jokes for Channel 4.
And then if anyone's listening, we would totally be up for doing that.
Totally be up for doing that. And you do look wacky. And I mean, wacky is really...
Wacky's funny.
You know, it's totally what sounds. Yeah, see, because when you... In a way, because you realise how easily what you tweet can be misinterpreted... Anyway, like the worst one I ever had was I posted, there was a really ridiculous Rolls Royce, a red Rolls Royce with the number plate A1. And it was parked like on a double yellow line somewhere in the West End. And I took a picture of it and tweeted something like, "Hey guys, this is my new car," or whatever. And I mean, the number of people who went, "Oh God, well done. Obviously, you're doing well." And it was like, and you just feel like such a dick because you go, "Well, obviously, I mean, it's not my, why would I?"
Yeah,
do
about
people
that.
Really think I would have that? And I was there. And then you think, well, I may as well just deliberately mislead, as you, Sophie Hagen, are the mistress of willfully misleading the public.
Oh, it's so fun. You can do this little thing, which is a horrible thing that I've only done a few times, but it's one of my biggest shame things, is to take a picture with a good friend, preferably like a good-looking friend, and then instead of writing, "Hey, me and Alexander are hanging out," you just write, "Me and my Alexander is hanging out." It's a tiny little thing. You could be saying that about anyone, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then everyone's like, "Oh, you got a boyfriend." You're like, "Yeah, maybe." Until Alexander's really pissed off. He's like, "My girlfriend is crying." Like, whatever. It's just like a tiny little thing in case you need someone to be jealous. And I haven't done that for like ages, since like at least a month ago.
Yeah, but then when they're delighted and they take the bait, then, you know.
It's the worst. It's like when you write a text wrong, but on purpose.
Yeah.
Like, "Hey, I'm on my way back from the city. It's been such a cool party." "Oh, sorry.
Sorry, it wasn't for you."
Oh. the wrong person I sent that one to. Anyways, what are you doing?
I know, well, I have got a friend though who always sends me texts in error, and I am now like, yeah, no, this is... this is definitely, you know, there is some mix-up on their phone.
I always do it, like, if it's... I always write, like, hey, so just had sex with this hot guy, miss you. And then in the same text you go, oh, whoops, sorry, wrong number. How are you?
Yes.
And then they're like, oh, cheeky.
Yeah, see what you did.
On the funny things.
On a recent holiday, it was funny to me and my friend at the time, and there's a reason behind that I'm not going to bother going into because it's boring, but... We had had quite a few cocktails, and I put on Facebook that I was engaged. I just changed my status to being engaged. And
oh, no.
Then the sheer horror of all the likes and all the... and just all the wow comments, and then the text from my family going, you've gone to India,
and
you're suddenly engaged.
Yeah.
And then I tried to take it off my Facebook page, but all I did was hide it from my own Facebook page.
Oh, no.
But it was still on everybody else's.
Oh, no.
And it finally came off, and I had the most amount of likes, and that was awkward because there was a few people that I had to kind of work with and kind of...
Yeah, had you named, was it the friend that you'd had the wines with who you said you're engaged to?
No.
Or you just changed your status to engaged?
I just
with
changed
no...
it to engaged because it was a conversation I was having with my friend about something, and then I thought this will be funny.
Yes.
Actually, it was her idea, and
yes.
I went, that's a brilliant idea. And then there was lots of photographs of myself and my friend on holiday together. Now, I've got no objection to, you know, I just don't happen to be a lesbian, but. There's lots of photos with the people going, you girls look so happy. And I thought, so.
Congratulations.
I got engaged to a lady in India, guys. So, yes, I had lots of... So I had quite a few texts from my family just wondering what the hell is going on with this holiday.
You need to just keep doing it, don't you? That is the thing you need to now.
Just
every other day, just do engaged, 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 engaged. To various
should we do it right now?
I do like that, though, just a very ham-fisted attempt to make my husband jealous by having pictures of myself taken with my Ali who does the
Ali,
let's get him
he's
in.
A very good looking guy,
let's
so.
Get him in. I'm shocked that we haven't had him in yet, really, but maybe next week we'll do an Ali special.
Let's try and do an Ali special. That's a great idea.
Some live
stings,
some real live Ali. In fact, I haven't done a sting for Sophie.
A what?
Because I did try and my brilliant improvised singing
That's
stings.
Good.
I can't remember who I tried to do one for. It might have been Evelyn, was it?
I think it was Tanya.
What a sting.
A singing sting.
And it was that you kind of
a
did
sting
a
is that, you know, the awful, the not the awful, I keep saying awful. You know the brilliant things that they play? The Fubar Radio.
Oh, right.
Lucy Porter. That's they call it a sting.
Oh, God.
That's
yeah,
the jargon.
Yeah, I've been as... In Denmark, it's called the stinger. I was like, what is this new thing you're talking about?
I've taken
the same word.
Yeah, we're so different.
Probably means
God,
the
it's
same.
Amazing, isn't it? Two cultures divided so much. I'll think of a Sophie Hagen sting in the next little bit.
Like
she said bravely. Now, shall we have a record or shall we talk about Avengers Age of Ultron? Amanda, what do you think?
Let's have a little record. Let's have a little record from our album of the week. And let's have
Which one?
Well, I was going to play the title track, actually.
Yeah, that's nice. That's nice. Are we going to have one more, or is this going to be the last one?
And then this will be the penultimate. We'll
lovely,
play out with
lovely,
one.
And we'll play out with one. Good, good, good. Okay, so more adventurous. Beautiful. There we go. More adventurous from our album of the week by Riley Kiley. Now, we were going to talk about Avengers Age of Ultron. Ultron is how you have to say it, apparently. Now, and I haven't seen it. Again, like the boxing, what I'm doing is I'm launching into territory that I know nothing about with absolutely no fear at all. But it was just what caught my eye was the furore over Black Widow, a character from the latest Avengers movie, played by Scarlett Johansson. And the reason it came to my attention was because there was a story that Joss Whedon had been hounded off Twitter by feminists because they were unhappy about the way that the Black Widow had been portrayed in this film, and they'd been giving him so much abuse about it that he'd left Twitter, and he has now come back and said, no, actually, that's not... I didn't leave because of that. I just wanted to have a break from Twitter anyway. But so there's been... It's sort of reactivated a lot of the wounds on Twitter about people who feel feminism is too attacking and divisive and, you know, all of those... the people who basically blame feminism for Islamic State. Those kind of people. But, you know, and also raises some kind of issues about that. But I haven't seen the film,
Sophie, I'm hoping you have, and you are not helping me at all here. You've not seen it.
I have no idea.
Are you interested in that, the Marvel comic universe?
I kind of had to be because my sister is obsessed with it.
Okay. Oh, well, good.
Obsessed with it.
So you're speaking from more of a position of informed
bystander. No, I mean, I haven't seen it. I haven't heard. I mean, I read the article. You know, I mean, I will usually side automatically with the feminists to begin with, and then I'll see if they're right.
Yes.
And then see if I'm still, you know, I'm not going to go. I mean, because what are the odds that it's not sexist, you know?
Well, it's Hollywood, isn't it? Yeah. So it's,
yeah. So it's something about she's, like, devastated because she can't have kids or something
like
that?
Yeah, well, you see, there's... So one reading of the film is that that's kind of built up to be her tragedy, is that she is... They sterilised her in the Red Room, and so she's unable to have children, and that's, you know, that's the defining characteristic of her, of her character. That's the main psychological hurt that's been inflicted. And so, you know, and yes, and you sort of think, well, yeah, if that is the case, then that is a fairly...
She's
reductive.
A superhero, isn't she?
Yeah, exactly. She's probably not that worried. She's getting off with the Hulk, apparently, which is another source of...
You don't want kids to distract you from that.
I know. The thing is, I have... because I'm not really in the world, and the Hulk that I picture... is the one from the 1970s television show.
Ooh,
who was
the cartoon?
There was a live action one when I was a kid. There was a live action Incredible Hulk.
Yeah,
that Amanda's coming in. Amanda's back in. She'll probably know. I was just saying that when I think of the Avengers movie and they talk about the fact that the Black Widow and the Hulk kind of get together, and I just picture the Hulk from
the TV
show. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Apparently,
yeah.
He doesn't look like that. Apparently.
Well, then he's not the Hulk.
He's not the Hulk. Not the slightly out of shape. There you go. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
He looks like Meatloaf, doesn't he?
Yes,
he does. There was something.
Would he do?
Oh yeah.
At a pinch.
Angry or not angry? Ooh, this is good.
You need to watch those TV shows. They will be online.
I think I did when I was a child. I think my mom showed it to me.
Yeah.
There was something very spooky about him as the Hulk, I always found.
It was because it was the era before, like, coloured contact lenses were very a thing. And
that's it. It's the eyes.
Yeah.
He looks a bit like Shrek as well.
Yeah.
In these photos.
Another very good look. See, Shrek, of all the cartoon characters, I would. I've always thought that.
He's a good guy.
He's
a good guy.
And actually,
he's got a good sense of humour as well.
And actually, not unattractive for a supposedly unattractive character. Anyway,
but they never are. Right?
No,
it's like, oh, she's so ugly. Oh, she took off her glasses. Whoa.
Whereas some of the actual male romantic leads, you go, but you are uglier than the woman who's pretending to be ugly. How is that still happening?
That's the one thing that really annoyed me about Seinfeld, which I know is like, that's the worst thing you can ever say to anyone, because people adore Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Was how they always, like, all these men who are not, like, conventionally amazingly looking would like, oh, she was ugly about a really beautiful woman.
Yeah.
I hate the world.
I know. And I think they would probably... I don't know. It would be interesting to see what they say about that, whether they would argue that that was part of the gag or whether it was just, you know... it's interesting the optimism of some men in terms of their...
Frasier apparently being this hot, sexy... You know, the character Frasier.
But
he's always been referred to as, oh, he's so handsome, he's so good-looking.
He does punch above his weight. He does
annoys me because he couldn't be... He can't. It kind of makes me feel a little bit sick.
Yeah.
Who says he's hot and sexy? Have they ever seen him fall off stage in that YouTube clip?
It's amazing. Kelsey Grammer when he falls off stage.
Oh, it's so good. He's so angry because he's so entitled. He's like, I should be on this. It's so good. It's so much
fun. If you like people falling over and being angry about it, then that is something you cannot afford to miss.
I now can't wait till the show's finished.
He's looking angrily at the stage behind him. He's like, what happened to myself? Oh, it's so good.
We should get on with this. We should furnish people with a reading list at the end of the show and a list of... Because we've referenced at least five things.
We should do handouts.
I assume people have been taking notes.
I would hope so. Yeah. I would hope somebody will be... Someone could create a fan page or a Tumblr. Do people still create Tumblrs for things? Could they create a Tumblr?
I could try. I've never created a Tumblr in
my
life.
No, not you. I mean a fan. We need a fan.
Oh, is that what happens?
We need
a fan.
It has to be like, oh, put it on Reddit. They'd love it on Reddit, wouldn't they?
Oh, God.
Oh, they would love us.
Do you know my...
I've now taken over the show.
Yeah.
Guys,
it's
our show,
it's
right?
Our show, gang.
This
hey,
is what
gang.
We do. Next week, you talk less, I talk more.
It's and Meatloaf and Nick Cave.
Oh,
just,
God, they haven't tweeted me. They haven't tweeted me back yet.
No, it will happen. It will happen. The worst... what was I going to say? I totally had a thing that I was going to say and it's absolutely gone. It's funny how the Pim's Hour becomes a lot more random, isn't it? I wonder if what we should do is listen back.
Oh, no.
No, let's not do that. Sorry, if you are listening to the podcast, what you might wish to do is in future treat it as a half hour, really. Treat it as, well, how long is the podcast, Amanda?
In all, it'll be about an hour and 15... No, 45 minutes, because we take out the music... It's surprisingly sort of short, really, so about 50 minutes.
Oh, fine. So,
which is
so
perfect
actually,
for a podcast.
I reckon you listen to the first half hour and then we get drunk and you can stick with it if you're drunk or bail out if you're not. If you're doing a run, then just do a 30-minute run with the podcast and then just quietly turn it off when you get in.
Or go home and have a drink.
That's a good idea. There you go. That's very good. Yes, Age of Ultron. I think we've covered that absolutely comprehensively.
We have nailed... Don't even need to watch the film. There we go. Putting a line for that.
I wish I could remember the thing. Anyway, it's fine. We'll move on. I think we should have a record.
Yes.
And regroup. I'll try and remember what the thing was. What are we going to have?
Going to have Little Dragon Ritual Union.
Oh.
One of my favourites.
Oh, good.
On FUBAR Radio.
Lucy Porter and Sophie Hagen. I didn't try and do anything interesting with it other than just sing your name for a long time. Now, Sophie Hagen, who's been a wonderful guest, so much better than Evelyn Mock. I mean, God, we thought we liked her, but now we know. I mean, God, the things we've heard. We will send our love to the lovely Evelyn Mock. In fact, why don't you both come in?
Oh, that would be amazing.
That would be a great idea.
That's actually a good idea.
Yeah, it's a very good idea.
We'll do that.
And then the other woman whose name is
Ingrid Dahl.
We'll have her line up. All go out the room and then we'll try and remember which ones come back in. Great. So please, before you go, tell me, as well as going viral, massively, hugely
it's
viral.
11 million now.
Yeah. Everyone in the world has now seen, it's 20, how many billion, 60 billion people have seen that clip. So what have you got going on? Where can I see you in the coming weeks, months?
Oh, God. I mean, I'm gigging all around the place, really. It's not, you know...
What about festivals?
No, this is a good one. On the 17th of May, that's on Sunday?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No.
Sunday,
thank God,
Sunday.
Yeah, I'm doing for the Nero Foundation at Leicester Square Theatre, and it's me and then some really good people. So it's like Adam Buxton and people like that. Yeah, so it's like a really good lineup. So
and
go
it's
and
a charity.
It's a charity.
And the Leicester Square Theatre is very nice. The seats are very comfortable.
Oh God, it's lovely.
Handy
and there
for
are still
Chinatown.
Some tickets left. It's to go for that 17th of May, Nero Foundation, Leicester Square Theatre.
But
have
mostly some dim sum.
Yeah, but if you can't make that, I'm on Twitter. And if you're listening to this on the podcast, that means you like podcasts. So you should listen to my podcast.
Yes. Your lovely podcast. It's comedy excitement. Tell us about that.
Comedians Telling Stuff, it's called. So it's comedians telling stories from being a comic, which I think is the best thing about being a comic. Sitting backstage, comedians will go, this happened last week, and you love hearing the stories. So it's comedians telling stuff. Lots of good people have been on. Kyle Kinane, Adam Bloom, Nick Helm, people like that. So it's brilliant.
And do people mostly tell stories about gigs that have gone badly or gigs that
well,
have gone
well? It's divided by topics. So they tell the gig of their first gig, their worst gig, backstage sexy time, which is the sexy episode where people talk about groupies and stuff.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, it's such a good favorite. And then like lessons learned, which is, I always almost cry. The very last episode I released, Tom Stade told this story that just made me weep like a baby for hours.
Oh my God.
So it's like people share like lessons they've learned in life and in comedy.
Tom Stade has been there. Tom Stade, for those who don't know, is a Canadian comedian who is an insane genius, absolutely barking mad.
One of the most sexiest voices in comedy.
It's unbelievable.
It's him, Nick Helm, No one else. Yes. Sexiest voices.
Yes. Nick Helm has a lot of admirers at Foo Bar.
Yes, he does.
Discovered.
Well, in the world, he's like.
And in the world, he is.
Yeah, he's the one that everyone thinks they're the only one who has a sex dream about him, but everyone actually has a sex dream about him.
I've never had a sex. Oh, do you know what? I don't think I've ever had a sex dream about another comedian.
Really?
I've got it fixed.
But also,
that.
Woken up, like, not just dreams, but like. Fantasies, I guess.
Fantasy, that's the word.
Actual, real life. Waking up.
Fantasy. Yeah. Yeah, see, I don't fancy comedians. I'm the woman who goes, sorry, I don't like funny men. I just like pretty ones.
It's so sexist.
I am. It's just, they're just eye candy to me, really, to be honest. I mean, obviously, my husband is a comedian and is also very
Justin pretty. Who?
Well, Justin Edwards. He's a he's a character comic.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, not stand-up. They're not quite as good, are they?
Hiding behind a mask.
We have this character in our house all the time. He slags off stand-ups and I slag off character comedians. Yeah, yeah, it's a lot of fun times. So we can download that from iTunes.
Yeah, it's on iTunes. It's on comedianstellingstuff.com, on SoundCloud. And, I'm on Twitter. I'm going to tweet about it all the time. So that's like the main place for me is my Twitter, and then I'll talk about shows and stuff there.
Yeah.
And also, find me on Twitter and find the tweet today where I'm trying to get Brian from Westlife to say yes to using a quote he gave me in 2004 on my poster.
Oh.
I'm going to need some support for that.
Okay, I'll be behind
good.
That. Okay.
Let's need some retweets, some favourites, so
that'd
he sees it,
if you're,
so he answers.
If your Edinburgh poster is a picture of you and James Dowdeswell cooking while Meatloaf and Nick Cave sing this seductively in the background with a big quote from Brian from Westlife, I think that's job done.
That's
right?
All I need.
It's absolutely job done. And are you doing any festivals?
Oh, God, yes. I'm going to Latitude and Camp Festival. I'm going up to Edinburgh. With my cooking show with James Dowdeswell.
Where is your actual show? When and where is your actual show?
It's the Liquid Rooms, the Annex Extra, and it's at 7:10.
That's a very nice venue.
It's not been built yet. It's not been built yet.
Oh, but the Liquid Rooms.
It's not the Annex. It's the Annex Extra, which they haven't built yet.
Okay, well,
so maybe it'll be lovely.
Purpose built for Sophie Hagen. She's like.
I demanded that I was the only person.
Like Jennifer Lopez.
We're going to do 12 hours.
She has her own green room. Well, how delightful. I think that we are going to close the show with a record from our album of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be the one, it's slightly melodramatic, slightly overblown. I absolutely bloody love it. Does he love you? Thanks very much to Amanda, by the way. Sorry, I always forget to thank you.
I thought you were just going to say goodbye to everybody and then say we'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah, bye. And I will be back in a couple of weeks. I'm not here next week. I'm on holiday. But thank you, Sophie. Thank you. Bye.
Job.